Before we get started, cannot go without wishing my dad, the original Bob Manning, a happy birthday today. 51 years young, he's taught me so much. He's instilled character in me, the virtue of hard work, chasing what you want, and getting things done the right way. Happy birthday, Dad. Live it up. We'll see you later at dinner. This show is for you. To the show that is sure to tell people face to face when we leave to go chase a ring. It is the Bobcast, a weekly tour of sports and pop culture. Hopefully you know the name by now. Hopefully you know me by now. It's August 5th, 2016. August, the nights get shorter, or the days get shorter, that is. The heat stays in the air in the daytime. The nights get cooler. September's getting closer. And you know what that means. It is football season. We're going to talk a lot of pigskin today, as we have not on this show to this point. But first, shouting out our good, good friends at CLNS Radio, a fantastic network of great podcasts, great live shows, outstanding personalities like myself and the Bobcast. CLNS Radio is the leading online provider of audio and video coverage of your favorite Boston sports teams. Follow CLNS on all the social media sites or just Twitter and Facebook, because those are all I know of at the moment. CLNS Radio is their at name on Twitter and on Facebook. You can find them at facebook.com/CLNSfans. And be sure to download the CLNS Radio free mobile podcast app, because you can listen to us there. You can listen to Celtics Stuff Live, Celtics Beat, Red Sox Beat. Whatever you want to hear, it's there on the CLNS Radio free mobile podcast app. Also, you can follow me at Real Bob Manning. You can follow our wonderful show at The Bobcast Show. And we have a Facebook account, too, that I haven't mentioned very often, which you should check out if that's your thing. I know a lot of people don't like Facebook anymore, but if you have one, give us a like. The Bobcast, a weekly tour of sports and pop culture. Updating you a little bit on some of the things going on in my life. As I said last week, there's a new opportunity for me coming up, and I can finally announce it because it's going to become official soon. So you heard it here first. I'm going to be writing about the Red Sox again. Examiner.com shut down so sadly at the beginning of July. That was where I got out a lot of my thoughts on our good old Red Sox down at Fenway. But FanSided reached out to me. They gave me a wonderful opportunity, and I'm going to be joining Bo Sox Injection with Sean Penny and some of the crew there. I'm going to be writing a weekly column, which will be called, cleverly, The Sock Drawer. So you'll want to check that out. I'll give you more info about that over on the Twitter page. Unfortunately, the Olympic job I applied for through SB Nation, pretty much a news desk short thing that I kind of do at Celtics Blog right now, some of the short, funny stories out of the Olympics, that got filled. I will not be doing that, but something to look out for down the line. My new platform I'm starting out at the beginning of September, I'm going to say, The Journey. That's all I'll say for now. The working name for this platform is called The Journey. Take it for what you will right now. We'll reveal more details about that platform as the weeks come by, but that is going to be something you want to tune into if you're interested in the workings of my career, some good stories going on. I'll have more information in the weeks to come. Don't worry. So let's get this show underway. The Olympics are firing off in Rio de Janeiro tonight at 7:30 with the opening ceremonies. The Olympics are fantastic, but as you know, we've had a lot of issues here on the show with how some of the things have gone down there in South America, where it's winter, by the way. But we'll get to that later in the show in our final segment. Team USA, they just love each other so much. They're singing silly songs on the airplanes. Carmelo's pissed, which has become a viral sensation. And Kevin Durant just looks really awkward out there. But luckily for him, the Team USA team is pretty much the Golden State Warriors who will be joining. So it's not that awkward. But stunning news out of Oklahoma City the other day, which we'll also get to later in the show. Extremely juicy details between him and Kevin Durant. Russell Westbrook, that is. And in other news, 19 days until the Bobcast relocates to Syracuse. I don't know what to expect. I don't know how the show is going to change. We may even take a week off as we hammer down some of those details. I'll try not to because I want to make this program as consistent and as fun as possible for you guys. But some things may have to change. I've never relocated in my life, so I don't know what challenges and conflicts are going to come in with that. But it is just an exciting time. Football season's coming up. I know they start training camp tomorrow. They're not very good, but they're going to be better than last year, which isn't hard, but it's certainly pleasing to see out there in the queues. Anyway, going back this last week, I always like to take a nice little trip every week of the summer, and this week we headed down to good old Gillette Stadium, Patriot Place. As you know, it's not like going to other Boston sporting events. There's a long ride, there's a good nap. It's almost like a camping trip or some sort of journey you have to take to get down to Foxborough. It's a good hour drive. It's a good hike to get down to nearly Rhode Island to go see that stadium. But training camp was kicking off. The Patriots did their annual in-stadium practice. Kevin Falk got inducted to the Patriots Hall of Fame, a Patriots legend without a doubt. And Tom Brady showed his face, which we will not see very often for the first portion of this football season. The first 25% of the football season, there will be no Tom Brady, which it's been 8 years since we saw something like that with the Patriots, so that's going to take some getting used to. But training camp was fun. It reminded me of just how rabid of a fan base the Patriots still have. I mean, they were pouring into the stadium. The group watching the Falk induction ceremony was all the way up the stairs in that main area of Patriot Place there. I think they said there was 40,000 people there to see training camp, which was unbelievable. As always, the Patriots fans are showing out for the Patriots, for Brady. Free Brady was on display, as you'd expect. And the rest of the guys out there. Rob Gronkowski, of course, getting a loud applause. We're getting excited for football season. We're getting excited for the Patriots, and of course, I had to bring someone on the program to check my Patriots love today. The good old Ravens-Patriots rivalry is about to be renewed in just 1 second, but first, as always, our guest on the Bobcast, someone from the great land of media, the world of entertainment, or even athletes themselves have been on the Bobcast. Today, we talk to a fellow journalist and one who's been a good friend of me and the program through its start. Our guest is sponsored by Loot Crate. You know it well. Loot Crate is a monthly subscription box service for the epic geek and gamer items and pop culture gear. That double and always throws me off. Loot Crate is something you have to have whether you're a Marvel fan, Warcraft, Dragon Ball Z, or any other fan of these pop culture items. For less than $20 a month, a crisp $20 bill, which we're going to get you later in the program, by the way, you'll get 6 to 8 items that include licensed gear, apparel, collectibles, unique one-of-a-kind items, and more. And you have until August 19th. That is just a couple weeks away. August 19th, write that down, 9 p.m. Pacific, to subscribe and receive that month's crate. And when the cutoff happens, that's it. It's it's over. You have to wait until September to get your next Loot Crate, and you never know what's going to come. So take your chance. Make sure to head over to lootcrate.com/CLNS and enter the code CLNS. That shouldn't be hard to remember. And you'll get $3 off your new subscription with Loot Crate. Anyways, here's our guest for this week, Chris Sizzler. I hope I pronounced that right. I probably should have practiced that beforehand. Chris Sizzler at FootballMan58 on Twitter. The football man and longtime football writer who now pens Ravens articles over at Ebony Bird on the Fansided Network, which I'll soon be joining. Fansided, that is, not Ebony Bird. A Maryland native, he sleeps in purple pajamas, he's a devout Tom Brady hater, and he isn't afraid to show it. One of the best Ravens coverage guys around, Chris, joins the Bobcast right now. Chris, how's your August starting out, man?
Well, football's back, so life is good. I'm kind of honored to be here. You guys got a lot of good guests coming in all the time, so it's good to be part of that group. And you know what? The Ravens are coming back, so get ready to see us in the playoffs. That's all I got to say.
I got to say, as much distaste as I have for the Ravens, and I'm sure you do for the Patriots, I know you do for the Patriots, we always get down in the playoffs, and it's always a classic matchup when these two teams meet up. So let's get going right off the bat with our football conversation. I know the people are going to love this because we're just so football hungry as Americans. But there's no shortage of problems with the game, and even last year I noticed it so clearly that, you know, whether it's on-the-field issues or off-the-field distractions, the product as a whole isn't taking a steep decline, but I'm starting to notice a slight decline in the product of the NFL, which has always been so great, so dominant through the 2000s.
Well, they're trying to over-officiate the game, so you're going to have a decline in enjoyment of that. But, I mean, the NFL's got a handful of problems. Every sports league does. The good thing is the money's not going to stop flowing in, so they have some time to fix it.
The money keeps flowing in, of course, which is all well and good for them and, to a lesser degree, the players. But as a fan, three issues I noticed last year, and I'm going to run through them real quick and see what some of your issues with the game right now are. Injuries first off the bat. Major players going down left and right, which if it's your team, it kills to see. If it's the opposing team, it makes the victories less rewarding. And last year, no shortage of superstars going down. Cowboys quarterback Tony Romo injured his collarbone. He was missing for a lot of the season. The Broncos left Ryan Clady for most of the season on injured reserve with a torn ACL. Jason Pierre-Paul famously blew off his hand with fireworks. Arian Foster took a gruesome groin injury that pretty much knocked him out of Houston this offseason. DeAndre Levy went down with the Lions. As you know, Terrell Suggs went down with a horrendous injury.
Half our team went down with an injury.
Yeah, most of the Ravens went down, as did the Patriots later on in the season. Dez Bryant went down. Jordy Nelson missed most of the season. John Sullivan for the Vikings. Sean Sweesum for the Steelers. Just go on and on and on. And then beyond that, inconsistencies in officiating and the continued meddling of Roger Goodell. I'm going to throw it off to you, Chris. What are your problems with the game? And, you know, how can the NFL take some steps to fix them?
Well, the first thing is Goodell has to get out of Goodell's way. I think the NFL wants to own the media cycle no matter what it is. And they kind of believe in no publicity is bad publicity. But if they just stopped caring about marijuana, they would be in the news for so much less bad stories. If they just stopped caring about marijuana, half the players they could suspend for marijuana would still be able to play, if not all of them. I mean, it's just, it's absolutely ridiculous. Plus, I mean, Eugene Monroe, take it for what you will, no longer a Raven, but take it for what you will. He made a good point. If you're going to have opioid painkillers as the main way to take care of players, you're going to get people addicted to painkillers. Nobody gets addicted to marijuana. Psychologically, you get addicted to marijuana a little bit.
There's potheads.
I mean, but it's so much less dangerous. It's safer. It's, and I feel like if you let go of the marijuana thing, and just say, oh, do it, but just stop caring if they do it. You'd solve so many problems for the league with the treatment of the players. And who wants to see the, who wants to see players suspended for an entire season because they smoked pot? Meanwhile, domestic violence accusers, Ray Rice got a 2-game suspension originally. That's ridiculous. If Greg Hardy could play in the league, Martavis Bryant should be allowed to play in the league. I'm just saying, it's absolutely ridiculous that a joint is more troubling to Roger Goodell than throwing a woman down on a bed of guns and claiming you're going to take her life. I'm sorry.
That's absolutely ridiculous.
Horrible, horrible problem. The NFL needs to stop caring about marijuana, say, hey, it's not legal, you shouldn't do it, but we don't care if you do it. That's how I would do it if I was the commissioner. Whatever.
I just remembered the Eugene Monroe scandal. Not even so much of a scandal. The Ravens pretty much made it one when they decided to release him. And I just noticed the connection between you covering the team and that scandal a couple weeks back that I did hit on this program. So there's no more perfect time to ask. What was your reaction to the Eugene Monroe release? The Ravens claim it had nothing to do with his crusade against painkillers.
I don't believe
in favor
it for a
of
second.
Marijuana.
But I also don't believe he was cut because of it. I think it was a factor. I think it was a factor. John Harbaugh's not loving the marijuana thing. He's just not loving it. He's not into it. He doesn't want to hear it. But he also has this quote-unquote open mic policy. You're allowed to say whatever you want. Yeah, we'll see. but I also think that the Ravens were tired of Eugene Monroe. Always hurt. Against the Patriots in the playoffs, said, hey, you're medically cleared to play. Oh, I can't play. No, I can't play. That really rubbed us the wrong way. And pass rusher is a real problem for the Ravens in that game. So I think it stems back to that. I mean, the fact that he's always injured, he retired, and now I honestly just think he didn't want to play football. But I don't know, because he did suffer injuries. I'm not saying he didn't deal with toughness and all that. But what I am saying is Eugene Monroe was cut because he wasn't on the field ever, and the Ravens couldn't count on him. And then this didn't help. I don't understand why it doesn't help. I think the Ravens and the NFL should be on the marijuana train. And this is coming from a guy who's never smoked marijuana, never had marijuana brownies, never done anything like that. Don't care about it. I personally could not care less about marijuana, but I don't believe for a second that it should be a big deal if someone does it. So, I mean, take that for what you will. Everyone has their opinion on that and their right to it. But, I mean, I don't know why the Ravens cared so much about it, but they definitely cared about it. But the fact that he wasn't on the field is the big thing.
Before we move on from that real quick, you said Harbaugh is, I think you at least alluded to that Harbaugh is a anti-marijuana guy. How much of that has he made clear openly, and how much pull does he have in roster decisions? Because as I know, Bill here has complete control, but you got Ozzie Newsome and some other heads up there in
Well,
Baltimore.
It's a triad. It's a trio. It's Ozzie Newsome, Eric DaCosta, and John Harbaugh make all the decisions, and they make them together. And I don't know if John Harbaugh's staunchly against the marijuana thing, but he has said he's not really in favor of it. I mean, I don't know. I'm not John Harbaugh, and I don't really ever get a chance to talk to the guy, so I don't know. I will say that he comes off as a guy who really doesn't like the topic.
So Deflategate, we're going to move on to that. We're going to hit on it for a second. I know a lot of people are burnt out about it, but we haven't really gotten to have...
I'm burnt out about it, but yeah, I guess up in your neck of the woods, it never ends.
Nope, it never ends. 2 years strong, following the thrilling victory over your Ravens. And even on the losing side, I think you can acknowledge how all-time of a matchup that was back and forth.
Yeah, we actually weren't upset about Deflated Footballs. We were upset about something that is now illegal and was kind of illegal before, but whatever. Whatever.
So you
had to go to your bag of tricks because we were that close to pushing you out, but whatever.
It's funny. The Patriots usually catch hell in the AFC Championship, but it was the reverse that year. The matchup of a lifetime in the divisional round.
Hey, it was a great game. It was a great game. Two good teams. You guys won. I'll give it to you. I'm not saying anything, but I will say the deflated footballs probably aren't a big deal. And this has nothing to do with deflated footballs anymore, at least. This is a witch hunt against Tom Brady. But I'm going to bring something up that I don't think you're going to want to hear. And this has nothing to do with Brady. It has everything to do with Bill Belichick. Sean Payton was suspended for an entire season, not because he was at fault, but because he was the boss and bounty gate falls on him. Deflated footballs, against the rules, Brady suspended for 4 games, Belichick's unpunished. Precedent says he at least gets 4 games. Belichick should be suspended for at least 4 games. If you suspend Sean Payton, and ask any New Orleans Saints fan, they think the same thing. So that's another problem with Roger Goodell, the inconsistency of it. This was a Tom Brady witch hunt, unfairly so, and I'm not a Brady guy, but unfairly so, this was a Tom Brady witch hunt. And Bill Belichick, you guys are lucky. You guys only got a 4-game suspension and a loss of a draft pick. Boo-hoo.
That was a big draft pick. Tom Brady's a big player to lose, but I will acknowledge your point right there because it's interesting. You haven't heard Bill Belichick hit on this scandal quite enough, I'd say. He's touched on it. He hasn't discussed it very much openly. I don't think there's any coincidence there, and I don't think there's any coincidence that Tom Brady just kind of shut up about it once the NFL pointed their eyes at him on the scandal because, as you know very well, Bill Belichick has his own scandal in the past.
And we don't even know what he has done that we haven't caught. I'm sorry. I respect the Patriots. You cannot deny that they've been a great franchise that have done great things. They have 4 Super Bowl championships. I always say, imagine how much we would respect them if they didn't have scandals. But we respect them nonetheless. My problem with this is Patriots fans don't get to whine about Deflategate. And I'm going to tell you this why. And I'm not going to fare well with a Boston crowd. I get that. But they don't get to whine. Roger Goodell destroyed the evidence of Spygate. He took it easy on you, and the NFL owners didn't like it. So when the Patriots have another scandal, by the way, ESPN came out with a report that said it was even deeper than just filming walkthroughs, but you know, we'll move on from that because at this point, who cares? I'm not judging up that. We're still judging through Deflategate. The NFL owners weren't happy that the way the Patriots got a slap on the wrist. So they told Roger Goodell, and by the way, Roger Goodell works for the NFL owners, to come down hard on the Patriots. So he had no choice. So he's stuck between, I have to punish my golf buddy, Robert Kraft, but I don't want to. Okay, I'm going to suspend Tom Brady for 4 games and take away a draft pick. Okay, that makes sense.
And Robert Kraft is a guy who has caught a lot of heat through this because he's the one who empowered Roger Goodell. He's the one who put him in his position of just unrelenting power that you now saw over Adrian Peterson the other day.
He did that because he thought he was his best friend.
Yeah.
Robert Kraft and Goodell are buddies. That's what's lost to this. The Patriots got a long leash from Roger Goodell for a long time when everybody thought there was stuff going on. So even if Tom Brady is innocent, even if the Patriots are innocent in 100%, which I don't even know that Deflategate's a big deal, but how do you expect anyone outside of Boston to give this franchise the benefit of the doubt? And if you can tell me that I'm supposed to give the Patriots the benefit of the doubt after their past improprieties, which you can't not acknowledge, you're such a homer.
I'm not asking you to give the Patriots the benefit of the doubt in this case, especially when it comes to Spygate, because as you said, as the details have emerged, that controversy has gotten shadier by the day. But when it comes to Tom Brady as an individual all-time great, and you know the haters are going to use this against him when it's all said and done because they need some amount of ammunition.
Oh, he's up there with Joe Montana.
There's no doubt, but when you need some ammunition against this guy, after a blowout win over Indianapolis in that game and one of the all-time great Super Bowl performances 2 weeks following that, it does seem kind of ridiculous that this could be used against them in any way when it's all said and done, and I hope you won't either. But when it comes to the Patriots, there's certainly questions to be asked, and now they have to deal with the consequences.
I actually defend Brady in a lot of cases where Ravens fans won't. I think this was – he went from being Mr. America, the underdog that came from nowhere, chip on his shoulder, hard worker, to, oh, he's got everything we want and we hate him. So, I mean, I get that Brady's not the devil. I do get that. I also think his whining gets a little overblown because, well, he wants the 15 yards for his team. Of course, you know, that's the referee's fault, not his. That being said, if you put Tom Brady in a dress, I don't know many people would know the difference.
Hey, I'm gonna say this about Tom Brady. I think one of the biggest reasons, and we're going to move on from this in just one second.
Okay.
Because
I cannot put the gloves off. I mean, I can't.
I'd say one thing about Tom Brady is that footwork continues to get better and better.
Oh, he's a great quarterback. And you know what? Well, the great thing about Tom Brady is he beats you before the snap. He knows what he's doing before you know what he's doing. And that's what the truly great quarterbacks. And I always got annoyed that Peyton Manning got so much credit for the same things that Brady does and gets no credit for. Brady does that so wonderfully. Brady, as a cerebral player, might be the top quarterback in the NFL's history.
Absolutely. So Ravens, Patriots, they seem so intertwined since the start of this new decade when they came in and absolutely throttled, I would say, a rebuilding Patriots team at that time or a reloading Patriots team. And that was
Patriots never rebuild, they reload.
One of the scariest sights of my time as a Patriots fan was watching Ray Rice just run wild all over them in the stadium.
80 yards for play, 2009, intercepted Brady three times, sacked him, I think, twice. It was a pretty good day.
So they've had their classics over the years between the missed.
It was a pretty good day.
The missed field goal that sent the Patriots to the Super Bowl where they ultimately lost. The revenge that the Ravens got the next year.
Lee Evans is the one you blame for that. He catches that pass, by the way, right in his hands.
Sterling Moore with the play of the century.
Hey, you know what? That's all Lee Evans. Lee Evans, all he's got to do, pull the ball in. I mean, he's a veteran receiver. You expect that from a rookie, but all you got to do is pull it in. Sterling Moore doesn't have a chance.
So running through these games, there's just been some absolute...
We kicked your butt in 2011, and we ended up losing because of two fluke plays. I'm sorry. If we had you beat. We had a touchdown pass in the end zone. Beautiful. Joe Flacco is the hero. Everything was good. It was all taken away.
How about that field goal from Justin Tucker that flew right over the... couldn't really see.
Bill Belichick grabbing the official. That's classic.
It's so fun. Classic. And we're gonna be butting heads this year. Week 14, Tom Brady's gonna be back Monday Night Football.
That could be a big game because the Patriots, Patriots get off to a slow start. They might actually need to win in a game when they usually have the division locked up. They might actually need to win that game. And the Ravens have tough game after tough game in the second half of the season. So that's going to be a war.
So looking at this Patriots roster, and we're going to look at the Ravens one in just a second with you, I'd say the biggest story is easily the receivers. You have about 10 wide receivers vying for spots from Nate Washington to Aaron Dobson.
You don't even need receivers. You have Rob Gronkowski and Martellus Bennett.
Yeah. Those guys, of course, help, but you do need receivers on the outside, as they showed 2 years ago with Brandon LaFell. Martellus Bennett, we're going to get to him in just a second. But how are you feeling about your Ravens? What do you think are some of the strengths and weaknesses of their team?
Well, I think the front seven is just locked and loaded. Bronson Kafusi being out for the year, it hurts a bit. But it's not like he was going to be a starter right away. Maybe he filled the Courtney Upshaw role. Maybe not. I love the front seven. Kamale Correa coming in as a rookie, starting next to C.J. Mosley. Then you got Brandon Williams. The middle of that defense, you're not going to be able to run on the Baltimore Ravens. I think Timmy Durnigan takes a step up. I think the pass rush, if Terrell Suggs is even half of what he usually is, I mean, him and Elvis Dumervil are going to wreak havoc. And you got Za'Darius Smith coming through. I think the strength of the team is the beef of the team. I think the front seven, I think the offensive line is going to be pretty good. A little worried about Ronnie Stanley. People are losing their minds that we lost Kelechi Osemele, but I love this guy, John Urschel. We've already seen him on the field because he's come in for injuries. He's done a good job. He's started 10 games, and he's done well. I'm not worried about John Urschel at left guard. So Ronnie Stanley really is the whole shebang. If he can even do okay, we'll be fine because our offensive line is stacked. We have too much talent in the backfield. We might have to keep four running backs. I don't know how you get rid of any of them. Taliaferro is probably gone. We might have to keep Terrence West, which complicates everything. You know, I think we look like a pretty good team. Eric Weddle's a huge addition. There's some things I'm worried about, but for the most part, I think we're a 10-11 win team. Last year, everything that could go wrong did. We just get just a little bad luck, not a lot of bad luck this year. We'll be fine.
I'd say your linebackers are looking a little bit old there, and you look over at the Patriots, and you have an all-pro in Jamie Collins, an absolute stud in Dont'a Hightower. I love the Shea McClellan addition. Loaded front sevens on both sides. It's going to be a fun matchup, and I'm already looking all those weeks ahead at that Ravens-Patriots matchup.
Well, I'll tell you about the old linebackers. Suggs and Dumervil, yeah, they're old, and Suggs is probably in his last season, but Za'Darius Smith coming up, he had 5.5 sacks last year. 3.5 of those sacks were in the last five games of the season. That guy, the light turned on, and he's going to be a monster. And then we got some really good young guys. Matt Judon is a guy who could end up making noise. We're going to have pass rushers. And we drafted Willie Henry, a guy who I think is going to end up being a good defensive end pass rusher. So we're going to get after Brady. Trust me on that one.
As sure as the sun rises, the Patriots are going to win the AFC East. However, the Ravens aren't just looking at the Patriots in the AFC. In fact, they're looking at the Steelers in their own division. And they're looking at the Bengals in their own division.
Oh, the Bengals are going down. The Bengals are on the down.
I'd still say it's one of the better divisions in football. Do you feel good about the Ravens winning?
Bengals are going to be tough. Bengals are going to be tough, but I don't think the Bengals. I don't see the Bengals as a playoff team.
Do you see the Ravens winning that division?
I do. I think here's the reason they win the division. They've beaten the Steelers three straight times, including a playoff game in Pittsburgh in 2014. The worst team in Ravens history beat the Steelers twice, and they went to the playoffs. I'm just saying, John Harbaugh is so far up the crevices of Mike Tomlin's mind that he literally can't make a good decision against the Ravens anymore. The Ravens have turned the tide and now own the power between the Pittsburgh Steelers and the Ravens. And you know what? If the Ravens sweep the Steelers, they win the division. If they split, they might win the division.
One thing I'll acknowledge for you in the complexion of the Ravens-Patriots rivalry is that you guys absolutely have a harder road there. I can't even imagine playing the Steelers twice a year.
You guys get a guaranteed playoff spot every year. What are you?
Jets.
And you know what? The Jets are going to be good this year.
The perennial, not good enough to touch the Patriots, I'll tell you that.
I'll tell you this right now. If Jimmy Garoppolo stumbles, you go 2-2, 1-3 in the first 4 weeks. I can see the Jets coming close. I'm not buying the Bills.
Every single year you hear about this rising stud in the AFC East that's finally going to touch the Patriots.
The Bills and the Dolphins are cupcakes. I'll give you that. But I'm buying the Jets stock. I'm not saying they're going to win the East. I'm saying they're going to come close. I'm saying they're going to make you have to play the entire season.
They came close last year, but then Ryan Fitzpatrick reverted to the Fitzpatrick of the past.
But they got a good defense. That defensive front for the Jets, unbelievable. They've got a good defense. They got a good running game. Now they got some weapons. If Fitzpatrick is just okay, and they get after Brady, they can steal a game from you. They split. They could do it. I would not be so quick to – now, I'm not putting money on it, but I wouldn't be surprised if the Jets won the division. I wouldn't be shocked.
I would absolutely put money on the Patriots win the division. So we'll get away from our two
teams. Of course you would. They always do.
We'll get away from our two teams for 1 second wrap up this conversation. And I asked you before you came on to give me your five, and I'll give you my five real quick.
Okay.
Five biggest storylines entering the NFL season, kicking it off with the Broncos, who I do believe will be a player in the AFC this year. But the quarterback is that big question.
I think the Raiders win that division.
I wouldn't be stunned, but with that defense, the running game, the
receivers, I got the Broncos as a wild card.
They're going to be players for sure, but watching that quarterback position, that's going to be key to whether or not they can repeat, which they probably will not. Number two, Jimmy Garoppolo. All eyes are on him in Foxborough. We'll see if he's Matt Castle. If he's Matt Castle, I feel pretty good about it. But my thing to watch for with him is if the Patriots adjust their style of play, because in college he played a spread offense, Dino Babers, fast pace. Do they adjust how they play a little bit? I think that'll be something to watch for in those first 4 weeks.
Lean on the tight ends. Lean on the tight ends.
Number three, Green Bay, Indianapolis. Green Bay's healthy again. Indianapolis has Andrew Luck back and healthy. But those are two teams who I think put way too much pressure on their great quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. And in the end, it kills them. I want to see how they spread it out around those guys. I don't trust the Colts to do it at all. I trust the Packers to do it a little bit more, but they're in a tough conference. And then number four, the NFC East. Don't even need to explain that one. That is just always a toilet bowl of drama.
Yeah, I think the Cowboys take it pretty easy.
I like the Cowboys too, but you never know with them either. Constant drama. I like the Giants last year before they went down the toilet bowl. So
well, the Giants could have been good. They just can't stop getting in their own way.
Of course, of course. And then the receiver battle league-wide, you're going to have Josh Gordon coming back from a four-game suspension, Dez Bryant, Antonio Brown, Brandon Marshall, just big-time receivers.
Oh, the receivers and A.J. Green, the receivers of the AFC North, just isn't fair. We've had a bad secondary for like 3 years, and we have to go against those receivers six times a season. It's just not fair.
It's absurd across the league how good of a wide receiver Erwin. And, of course, it's somewhat attributed to how easy it is to pass the ball nowadays, but the talent's unquestionable.
And kids grow up wanting to be wide receivers.
Absolutely.
People used to want to be quarterbacks. Now they want to be wide receivers.
So, Chris, what are your big five storylines entering the NFL season?
Well, for me, Roger Goodell is a big storyline. He always is. He's the repugnant jerk that leads the NFL. So Roger Goodell is going to make storylines because he can't help himself. But let's get into actual football here. Let's stop worrying about Roger Goodell and his debauchery of everything he does. I think this is a year of surprise teams. I think the Jacksonville Jaguars and the Oakland Raiders end up turning it around. You look at what the Jaguars did this offseason. Miles Jack, Jalen Ramsey. My goodness, if the Ravens got Jalen Ramsey, I would have thrown a parade. Jalen Ramsey, Miles Jack, you got Blake Bortles with Hearns and Robinson. That's a talented, talented team. I think the Jaguars take a step up. I think they might win the AFC South because you don't know what you're going to get from the Colts. And you don't know if Brock Osweiler is the real deal with the Texans yet. So the Jaguars, AFC South, that's the thing. And then look at the Oakland Raiders. You got such a good roster. Khalil Mack might be the best player. You got Derek Carr and Amari Cooper. You add it to the offensive line with Kalijah Uzomah. I think they're loaded with talent. I think it's about time they win.
The Jets, I'll tell you, though, will not be a surprise team. We'll see how that pans out.
It wouldn't be surprising, though. They're not going to be a surprise team because it's not surprising that the
Jets.
You're a Patriots fan. You have blinders on. Trust me. No one outside of Boston would be surprised if the Jets had a good season. They had a good season last year. They came close to the playoffs.
They did not make the playoffs in typical Jets fashion, just capsizing down the stretch.
Well, I was frustrated with that. If the Jets get in the playoffs, the Steelers don't. So yep. I was mad. I was watching Ryan Fitzpatrick – going, you son of a beach. I mean, I was mad. So I'll dog the Jets too, but I'm not going to be surprised if they have a good season. I wouldn't call them a surprise team at all. If they win 10 games, it's not a shock.
All right, your final 3 points entering the season.
All right, so a surprise team. And then I think it's going to surprise no one, the Ravens come back. If it does, shame on you. 6 out of the last 8 years we've been in the playoffs. Ravens are coming back, and the AFC North, the best offense in the NFL potentially with the Pittsburgh Steelers, and a hard-nosed Ravens team, you're going to have two epic battles between two really good teams that are going to decide the AFC North. And then the Bengals matter too, but wake me up when they win a playoff game. The AFC North, man, it's a good division. That I think that's a storyline, because that could be two playoff teams. One year we even got three playoff teams out of the AFC North. That's half the AFC playoffs. The AFC North is going to decide a lot of things, and the Ravens going back to power. The scary thing with the Ravens, if they go to the playoffs, they can look like they have no shot at winning the Super Bowl, and they can get there. That's why the Ravens are a scary team. They just make the playoffs, everyone is screwed. And then my next big thing is, where does Oakland and San Diego go? Do they stay? Does Oakland go to Vegas? San Diego go to Los Angeles too? That's an interesting storyline.
They definitely need a new stadium out there in San Diego. So we're talking with Chris Sizzler of Ebony Bird of the Fansided Network. We're going to move on to our final segment with him right here before we let him go and get his grind on. The Bobcast questions. Every week here on the Bobcast, we let you, the listeners, get involved, be part of the show, and ask me and my guests some excellent questions from the worlds of sports, pop culture, and life. But it's all football questions today because we're in football mode. First, from at Sailboat Studios, he asks, what's the bigger key of the Patriots' success this season, Deion Lewis or the health of the offensive line? Chris, throwing that one to you first.
Offensive line, without a doubt. The offensive line allows everything to happen. Deion Lewis, that's just a factor of everything else. You can plug anyone in that position, and you're going to be fine. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
I agree with that, and over the years, you've seen it again and again. The Patriots, the offensive line is the center of everything they do just because there's no mobility with Brady and the running game isn't a point of emphasis. But Deion Lewis, I wrote last year right before everyone, and it started with him, fell with injuries on that offense. He was really the X factor in what I thought was becoming the greatest Patriots offense of all time last year. Between Gronk, Edelman, Lewis was absolutely fantastic. The biggest surprise of the NFL last year was his explosive start. So it'll be interesting to see what he does coming back. At STB522L asks, the Giants retooled their defense. Are they playoff likely?
No.
Leaving it right there. I did like the Giants last year, and you know, us Patriots fans have our beef with the Giants, too. But Eli Manning is a fantastic quarterback.
You mean those two Super Bowl losses?
Eli Manning is a fantastic quarterback. That's all I'll say about them. And when you have a fantastic quarterback, your team is going to be able to do something and be in the race. But like you said earlier, they couldn't get out of their own way last year. They had a wide open door to win that division and just fell down every stair they could the past few weeks of the season. It's unbelievable they lost that game.
I'm not buying McAdoo as the head coach. I'm not buying it.
Yeah, Tom Coughlin getting ousted there was definitely a surprise. But
nothing's
going to
change there. They're an offensive-minded team. They bring in defensive guys, but they're an offensive-minded team. Nothing's changed.
Last question from a friend of the show, at Tony Capobianco. Are NFL players as corny as Martellus Bennett says they are? If you don't know, Martellus Bennett was joking around with his brother Michael Bennett the other day in a piece for, I don't even know where the piece came, ESPN it was. And he called J.J. Watt corny as a personality. Are NFL players corny, Chris?
Have you seen Darrell Suggs? He ain't corny at all. I think NFL players are human beings. They have personalities like all of us. And the only difference, they can do things we couldn't even dream of.
Like bet cars on the line for receiving challenges. They put the cars on the line. It does get a little goofy. I think J.J. Watt as a personality off the field can get a little ridiculous. But on the field...
Well, he's allowed to. You're allowed to be ridiculous if you're awesome.
Yep, absolutely. So that is Chris Sizzler of Ebony Bird. You can find his writing for all things Ravens there. You'll see me and him beefing on Twitter throughout the season, of course.
Oh, for sure.
At FootballMan58.
It's all done with respect. It's all done with respect.
Absolutely. So thank you for being aboard. Have a good day at work, Chris.
Yeah, man.
And we'll see you later, hopefully,
all right.
On the podcast.
Thanks for having me on.
Chris Sizzler on the podcast, another fantastic guest on our weekly tour of sports and pop culture. So, as we always do here on the podcast, time for some impactful stories in sports and pop culture. We should probably get a better name for this segment. I think that's just a little too plain. Send me some if you got some. Someone who doesn't need a new name is SeatGeek. Buying tickets online for sports and concerts has been a confusing process for a long time. It's always so hard to find the best deal for the game or show you want to go to. And football season's coming up, podcast listeners. Whether you want to watch at home or get that experience in-game, check out SeatGeek because they've come along and created an amazing app and website that makes it easier than ever for fans to buy and sell tickets. And here is your offer, courtesy of CLNS Radio. $20 rebate. $20. You can get it if you download the SeatGeek app, go to the settings tab, and click add a promo code, and enter our promo code RSB. That's RSB, and SeatGeek's going to send you a $20 rebate after your first ticket purchase. Frank Ocean, where you at, man? It is 10:48 on Friday, August 5th, and if you've been paying attention, if you had your eyes on your phone this last week, you would have learned, as I did down at Patriots camp, that according to a source, as we so often hear in the media world nowadays, Frank Ocean is dropping his long-awaited album, Boys Don't Cry, the follow-up to his 2012 masterpiece, my second favorite album of my lifetime, Channel Orange, an R&B soul fusion album with so much emotion, so much meaning packed into it in his own life, and it just seems to be such a confusing and secretive life, as we've all learned ever since he dropped it, because ever since we got our hands on that album, which won a Grammy for the best urban contemporary album in the 2013 Grammys, his debut album nonetheless, we've been hungry for more Frank Ocean. And he was so active in the limelight when he first began his career, whether it was his infusion in that Watch the Throne album that Kanye West and Jay-Z dropped to a lot of fanfare back in 2012, I think it was. And Nostalgia Ultra and his time with Odd Future and all the outstanding features he provided back in the early 2010s. It's now 2016 and we've been waiting for the follow-up ever since. I'm going to check Twitter really quick just to make sure he didn't drop it. I'll know by whether Twitter is still running or not because it's probably going to shut down when it drops. It is still running, and there is no sign of Mr. Frank Ocean. So taking you through the timeline real quick, 2012, he hinted at never releasing an album again. 2013, he hinted at new music. 2014, we heard that he's almost done with the album. And then, finally, April 2015, announced his Boys Don't Cry with a picture through his Tumblr account, which is really the only time we hear this international man of music mystery. July 2015, we heard Frank Ocean was set to drop Boys Don't Cry, and everyone remembers where they were at the end of July, clock counting down to midnight into August, and the album never dropped. And thus started a year of secrecy, absence, no real comments across the board. His producer came out, who produced Channel Orange, and said that it's going to be out when it's ready. So basically, patience became a virtue for Frank Ocean fans. And finally, 1 year later, with really his only appearance being that feature on Kanye West's The Life of Pablo album, which kind of woke up the Frank Ocean fan base, July 2016, he releases a library card with a bunch of crossed out dates, and you had to kind of take it for what you would, but a lot of people thought that it signaled that after all these failed dates to release Boys Don't Cry, it was finally here. A live stream drops through Apple Music, and that is backed up by a New York Times report this week that on Friday, August 5th, Boys Don't Cry would be released to the world. Here we are, it's the middle of the day, I stayed up all the way to midnight, woke up early this morning to do this show, and I'm still looking right now, and there is no sign whatsoever of a Frank Ocean album. We're waiting on Boys Don't Cry. We have so many questions about this, just so reclusive, and it's almost seen with a negative connotation, a superstar not having a huge ego, a massive personality, an easily identifiable face that you see again and again and again. And talent ultimately leads you to that status, but then mediocrity follows, as you have to hold on to that attention once you grab it in today's constant 24-hour news cycle. You're going to get your 15 minutes of fame if you do something great, but you have to keep making noise, keep yelling at the camera to get it shining at you. But Frank Ocean's different, and this is something Jamie Milton touched on for Independent. Frank Ocean, as she says, is the last superstar to value time and secrecy. Frank Ocean values privacy over the share-happy mentality most acts are encouraged to keep today, says Jamie Milton. You won't find many carpenters live-streaming their work. Frank Ocean, however, has something else in mind. The New Orleans artist has followed a three-year musical silence with a stint in a workshop. Since the week started, he's been sawing wood, drilling holes in planks, neatly arranging blocks into piles, and having the occasional rest by his station. And thousands of diehard fans have been watching his every move via an Apple Music live stream. The meaning behind all this became clear once his first five-hour woodcutting shift elapsed. Whatever he's making, this is a process that takes time. And the same applies to his new album, a record originally due in July 2015 that's more than 12 months late and believed to finally be coming out tomorrow. In the past year, there's been a chorus of "What's taking him so long?" outcry, a sense of being duped by an artist who's fooling around. His carpentry stint might be a one-dimensional metaphor, but that's the point. Frank Ocean's craft takes time. Every piece matters. He's made fans wait for years. Now he's showing them why they've had to wait. In an age where millions tune in to watch a watermelon explode live on Facebook, perhaps the odds were in Frank's favor. But who else could get thousands of strangers to stare at a workbench for 12 hours straight? Every so often, his laborious chop and saw process is interrupted by what sounds like a snippet of deconstructed ambient music. But we're hardly talking fireworks. Indirectly, he's providing an alternative to short attention span instant gratification. Not in a snobby, I'm better than you way. More as a means of encouraging people to appreciate the suspense as much as the reward. And she goes on, but it's a fantastic piece because it really sums up what Frank Ocean's all about, and I think summarizes why there's such widespread interest in him. First of all, the work, the music, is the centerpiece. Music is power, and his is magnificent. As you've heard over the years from him, there is a certain soul, find yourself identity search within his music, whether it's love, whether it's relationships with people, religion, and even to a lesser degree, his own sexuality. And I think a significant reason Frank Ocean has caught the attention he has over the span of his career, it's not the central reason. The central reason is the brilliant music, but his sexuality has been a point of focus, and he's made it no lie in a hip-hop culture that he's been centered in as a member of Odd Future that, one, he fell in love with a man. Two, he hasn't quite outright said it, but the speculation is that he is a bisexual, or at least an LGBTQ community member, which, of course, is all the focus in today's society, as they hope to find prominence, good work, status as entertainers. He's sort of become a rallying point for these people who are continuing to try to find their platform for a voice too. But as Frank Ocean shows, having a voice doesn't always mean being loud. Having a voice means quality work that sometimes you have to wait for. And as crazy as it's going to drive us, as infuriating as it's going to be if Boys Don't Cry doesn't release today, I'm ready to wait. Good things come with time, and as we've seen with countless records throughout the past decade, rush work isn't good work. Music on a consistent basis isn't consistent music. Just look at Future. That's all I'll say about that. So Frank Ocean, released today, the world will be in absolute joy. There's a reason people are still focused on him for his lack of activity and his quiet demeanor. It's the music, it's the quality, and he's still looking up to follow one of the greatest albums of all time. As you know by now, Kevin Durant left Oklahoma City this offseason, leaving an irreversible stain on both the Thunder and the NBA landscape. Some even saying they don't want to watch with how dominant the Warriors are slated to be. But good news for the league. Good news for Oklahoma and bad news for the Celtics, who now have to wait even longer for their touted superstar. It will not be Russell Westbrook next season who arrives in Boston to make the Celtics contenders because, as our good friend Snotty Drippin writes, Russell Westbrook is staying with the Oklahoma City Thunder from B-Ball Breakdown. The summer has been not so kind to the Oklahoma City Thunder. Not only will they go down in infamy for blowing a 3-1 series lead to lose to the Golden State Warriors in the Western Conference Finals, defensive stalwart and fan favorite Serge Ibaka was unceremoniously shipped out for young shooting guard Victor Oladipo. The final insult to added injury was when Thunder superstar Kevin Durant skipped town to join the very team that defeated them. With the heartbreak of Durant's defection still fresh, the fan base quickly turned their attention to the lone beacon of hope remaining, the combustible Russell Westbrook. The 27-year-old point guard's own restricted free agency loomed large in 2017, and the thought of losing another star for nothing was more than Oklahoma City could bear. Preemptive trade rumors ran rampant. Russell Westbrook was linked to everyone from the Celtics to the Heat to the Lakers, but Thunder fans can allow themselves a sigh of relief. First reported by agent Wojnarowski and now confirmed by ESPN, Westbrook and the Thunder agreed in principle to a 3-year, $85.7 million extension. The extension is a win-win for both the franchise and Westbrook. It gives general manager Sam Presti quite a bit of breathing room, allowing him at least 2 full years to maneuver more high-level talent to run beside Westbrook. Outside of securing the services of a top-5 player, the extension also is a psychological salve on the bruised heart of Thunder Nation. While Durant can coach his flight to the Bay Area strictly business, it's not that easy for fans in the organization alike to separate the business side from feeling an abandonment stirred up by Durant, the string bean they drafted 9 years ago, leaving on his own to join a heated rival. The fact that Westbrook would tie himself to the franchise for 2, possibly 3 years, dulls the string of KD's departure. Now, there are multiple layers to this. Westbrook becomes one of the highest players in the league, as he deserves, and no player is going to pass that up. The Thunder threw the money on the table, finally, after all these years of cheaping out on guys like James Harden and now Serge Ibaka. They're keeping their superstar. Westbrook is the central point of Oklahoma City now. He's the franchise for the next 2 years. And unfortunately for Celtics fans, we all know what's coming. They're going to chase a star to put alongside Westbrook and become a player again in the West. And Westbrook in 2 years is going to have the ability to opt out. So that likely means for the Celtics, no Blake Griffin and no Russell Westbrook, certainly. But it is good to see something good happen to the Thunder after the Kevin Durant departure. There is no shortage of drama unfolding between the two, and they're not coming out right and saying that there's beef, but there does seem to be a little bit of a cold war going on between the two. First, the news dropped that Kevin Durant told Russell Westbrook he'd return. That, of course, did not happen. And, of course, he left to the best team in the NBA. Russell Westbrook said he found out just like everyone else over Twitter, and all he got from Kevin Durant was a text message. Aww, the text message breakup. There was the news that Kevin Durant didn't go outside because of all the heat that he was taking in the days following his signing with the Warriors, and that just shows you how much awareness Kevin Durant has to what such a scumbag move it was heading out west to the Golden State Warriors. And he knows it. He went on the other day in some other article about how his relationship with Russell Westbrook is fractured now. There's some tension there, as if he didn't create it by leaving. Now we're learning from Russell Westbrook that there's no issues at all. And of course, it's working on Team USA. Kevin Durant came out yesterday and said, good for Westbrook for staying in Oklahoma City. But this is just the latest chapter in the NBA gunning towards Kevin Durant and the Warriors. Kevin Durant's going to be the biggest villain in the NBA next year, which is unbelievable. As I said in a previous episode, LeBron James has become a hero. And he will be again if the Cavaliers reach the finals. And every single night, teams are going to be gunning to beat the Warriors. And this sets that dynamic up again. Go read that piece by Snotty, a good friend of our show. And before we depart, we're going to hit on our favorite topic, the Olympics. This is via NBC News. U.S. intelligence has assigned more than 1,000 spies to Olympic security as part of a highly classified effort to protect the Rio 2016 Summer Games, American athletes, and staff. Hundreds of analysts, law enforcement, and special operation personnel are already on the ground in Rio, according to an exclusive NBC News review. In addition, more than a dozen highly trained Naval, and Marine Corps commandos from the U.S. Special Operations Command are in Brazil, working with the Brazilian Federal Police and the Brazilian Navy. The U.S. military, as expected, has placed large military units on call should a rescue or counterterrorism operation be needed. The classified report outlines an operation that encompasses all 17 U.S. intelligence agencies, including those of the armed service, human intelligence, spy satellites, So the U.S. Army and spies are on full work in Rio, adding to this constant soap opera that finally, after months of bacteria, arms washing up on shores, police and firefighters quitting, hospitals being closed, riots in the streets, on and on and on, the drama in Rio unfolded, and now the U.S. feels the need to have super spies on the ground watching it all unfold. Now, of course, we saw similar worries at the Sochi Olympics, and overall, besides some dogs running amok in the streets and Russia killing these dogs, I think it was, which was a brutal story. All went well in Sochi, and all may go well again in Brazil, but you can't ignore these horror stories out of there. They're absolutely hilarious. It won't be funny if someone gets hurt. It won't be funny if someone gets bacteria out of that horrid lake, which they're going into with no worries whatsoever. As the Olympics get underway tonight, watch for complete chaos. That's all I'll say. They're on the edge of falling off a cliff into a puddle of chaos. Hopefully these spies and the rest of the preparers out there in the Olympics out in Rio can get it together and host a fantastic summer of sport, because when else do you get to see swimmers, gymnastics, volleyball players, sailors, all these obscure sports that we don't pay much attention to outside the Big Four here in America now get a extra focus? Specifically track and field. Track and field is really the feature event of the Olympics, and all eyes are going to be on all the Americans ready to perform down there in Rio. The Olympics are fun. A lot of people hate them. A lot of people love them. I know I'll be tuning in throughout the month of August, and hopefully the gold comes home and nobody gets hurt, but I wouldn't count on it. I feel like there's going to be at least one mishap with all the drama going on out there. And with that, watch the opening ceremony tonight at 7:30. Tune in to past episodes of the Bobcast. We had an excellent talk with Chad Finn of the Boston Globe last week on Chris Sale, baseball, the dynamic of the game and media nowadays. And we hope to see you in the ensuing weeks for more outstanding episodes of the Bobcast. We have two planned. Jay King, who I famously went one-on-one against, is joining the program next week to talk Celtics, who we largely ignored in today's program. Thanks to Chris Sizzler for joining us to talk football and get into it over Ravens-Patriots. You can follow him at FootballMan58. You can follow me at Real Bob Manning. And please, past episodes of the Bobcast are available. They've all been outstanding. I'd say they've gotten better by the week. And they're all available for your ears at clnsradio.com/Bobcast, iTunes. Give us a subscribe. Give us a rate. Let us know how the show can improve. Be honest. Let us know what this show can do to get better. Then we're off to Syracuse, August 24th. We are on the road. Hopefully you'll follow the journey as we move there. Hopefully we can get some big-time Syracuse personalities on the show. This show has nothing but room for growth ahead, and we thank you for being aboard for the early portion of it. I know I've teased t-shirts. It's a hectic time. I can't really get the order in right now, but for all of you who supported me through the first 9 episodes, when those t-shirts drop, they'll be coming to you. Thank you so much. Be sure to get your questions in for Jay King and I next week. DM me, shoot me a tweet, email me, bman260@gmail.com. That is our episode for the week. That is episode 9. We'll see you next week. That has been the Bobcast, a weekly tour of sports and pop culture. And shout out Phasman Beats for this brilliant intro and outro track we've been using for a couple weeks now. It's so soulful. It's so infectious. I could listen to this all day long, and I'll send you out with it. Phasman Beats. You can find them on Twitter. Peace!